On the bottom of Chav Zayin Amid Beis, we'll start with Chav Zayin Amid Aleph, just to backtrack a little. There's machlokas between Abai and Rava about a mumar ochel nevelos lahachis. And the Gemara establishes that we paskin like Abai, which again, that's a little bit of an unusual psak. So the Gemara says the reason why we paskin like Abai is because of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir said that if there was a hazama against Edim on a monetary case, Bedini Mominus, then we apply the principle of Amrina Michumra Mikula Lechumra, meaning we cannot accept that testimony even on a capital case, even on Dini Nefashos. And the Gemara applies that logic to Abaye. Abaye says that if a person eats non-kosher food, then even though that's only called Ra Lamokom, La Shamayim, we still say Ra La Shamayim, Ra La Brios, meaning from a Kula we go to a Chumra. If he's Chashud, he's suspect to violate a lower prohibition, then he'll violate a higher prohibition. So the Gemara says Hilchus HaKabai, and the Gemara says, how do you know that Hilchus HaKabai? And the Gemara answers that there's a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Meir. So on the bottom of Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, the Gemara tries to come up with a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Meir to justify our Psak like Abaye. So if you count up, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines up from the bottom of Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, the Gemara says, Vehechas Sosamlon. So where's the Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Meir? And the Gemara tells a story. Ki ha de Bar Chama, the case of Bar Chama, Katol Nafsha, there was a rumor circulating that he had killed someone. Amalei Reish Galusa l'Rav Abba Bar Yaakov. So the Reish Galusa turns to Rabbi Abba Bar Yaakov. Apparently Rabbi Abba Bar Yaakov was one of the greats in the Bezdin at that time. Poke ayin, but go check it out. In other words, see if you can adduce evidence to prove this rumor to be true. And ivade katal, and if in fact you can establish that Bar Chomo is guilty of murder, and then lichuyue liene, which literally means that we take out his eyes. Rashi says that the last Rashi on the daf, he says that now Butler Mises Bezdin, although Bezdin doesn't have the ability to put someone to death, I mean for that you need a certain level of Bezdin to be Dan Din in a Fush, but nevertheless there's something called Bezdin Makin V'onshin Shalom in Adin. What does it mean Shalom in Adin? That there are certain extra powers, you know, meta halachic powers that are given to Bezdin, that in order to make sure that society runs smoothly, they're allowed to punish people shalom and adin. That's a sugya in Masechta Yevamos. So we have to punish Bar Chama if he's guilty of murder, as the rumor has it. Also treisadi asidu be devade katal. And there were two witnesses that came forward and testified in front of Rabbi Abba Bar Yaakov to the effect that Bar Chama had actually killed someone. So everything hinges now on the kashus or the pasus of these two eidim. Now, we're going to soon see that there was a problem with this eidus. Ozil iu aisi treisadi asidu be bechad. Okay, so let's go slowly. So now we have Reuven and Shimon testifying that Bar Chama committed murder. Now Bar Chama brings Edim to try to disqualify Reuven and Shimon. So Levi and Yehuda are now the Edim on behalf of Bar Chama to undermine and disqualify the status of Reuven and Shimon that are testifying against Bar Chama that he killed someone. And Asidu Bei Devade Katal, I'm sorry, that we read already. Ozal Iu, now Bar Chama goes ahead, and Isi, he brings Trey Sadi, and he brings two edim to testify asidu bei bechad mihanach, to disqualify one of those two witnesses. Again, if you disqualify one of the two witnesses, that's enough to undermine the entire kat. Chad amar kamoi didi. Now, the two witnesses of Bar Choma, they tell two different stories about one of the witnesses, let's say about Reuven. One of Bar Choma's witnesses says, Ganav kava de chulsha. He stole a kav, which is a certain volume, a certain weight of shelled barley. V'chad amar kami didi, I saw him steal, and here we turn to the Afchav Zayinam Ibeis, kata deburtia, a spear handle. And now we have the following question: can we be mitzarif these two witnesses and form one kat? Because the lowest common denominator is that this witness stole something. Did he steal something in case X, or did he steal something in a different scenario? That we have a discrepancy between the two witnesses. So Amar Leiser of Abba Bar Yaakov turns to Bar Chama and he says to my Daitrach, what do you think when you bring these two witnesses, Ki Rabbi Meir, that you want to accept the Shita of Rabbi Meir? Now, what this means is that yes, I agree with you, we can combine these two witnesses and disqualify one witness, but only as far as Dini Mominus is concerned, meaning that they were chashud, or he was chashud at one aid, on what's called a kala. Kala means relatively light, because now you want to say that they're going to lie, they're going to perjure themselves, even on a chamura, even in Dini Nefashos. That's based on Rabbi Meir. So apparently you, Bar Choma, that you brought these two edim as, and you want to therefore disqualify them to testify about you, that you committed murder, then you're suspecting them to perjure themselves even in a murder case, and that means you're going from a kala, from a monetary case, all the way up to a chamura. And we have a principle, says Rabbi Abba, that Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi, Aloch, Rabbi Yossi, I think in Erevin, if I remember correctly, that in a machlokas shin Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, we accept the shita of Rabbi Yossi, which means that mikala lechamura lo amrinun. Even if you're suspect to perjure yourself in a lighter case, you would not be suspect in a nefashos case, in a more severe case, a chumer case, in a capital case. And therefore, since Rabbi Yossi Hamar Huzam B'dini Momenos Kasha L'dini Nefashos, that from Mikala L'chamura Lo Amrinon, and even though a person is suspect in a monetary case, there was Hazom against him, that was the previous sugya that was yesterday's Daf Yomi, which we didn't do, but that's only as far as monetary cases, but we're not suspecting him as far as capital cases. Okay, now at this point, enter front stage Rav Papi. Rav Papi is one of the 10 sons of Rav Papa. And he says the following. You're right, that as a general rule, we paskin like Rav Yossi against Rabbi Meir. But there's an exception to that rule. Hani Mili, that only applies that rule. Heich delo sasam lantanik Rabbi Meir, if we don't have a stam mishnah like Rabbi Meir, meaning Rabbi Yehuda Nasi organized the Mishnayis, and he has a Mishnah without any name, it's an anonymous Mishnah. If we find such an anonymous Mishnah, that means we paskin like that Mishnah. That's why Rebbe deliberately omitted the name of the Tana. And we have a Stam Mishnah, an anonymous Mishnah, which reflects the Shita of Rabbi Meir. Hacha sasam lantanik Rabbi Meir. If there's a Tana, if there's a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Meir, we're going to paskin like Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara wants to know, how does Rav Papi know that there's a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Meir? Mimai. And now the Gemara analyzes it and goes through various possibilities till it finally comes to a conclusion, a definite conclusion that there's a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Meir. Ilema meha disnan. If it's a Mishnah in Masechta Nida, kola roi ladun dini nefashos, roi ladun dini mominos, that anyone who is fit to serve as a judge in a capital case is therefore fit by virtue of a Kal Vachomer in a monetary case, because a capital case requires a higher standard of judges, money. And you think that this Mishnah has to reflect the Shita of Rabbi Meir. Why? Because Ilei Rabbi Yossi, I can eliminate the possibility that this Mishnah reflects the Shita of Rabbi Yossi. Why? Because according to Rabbi Yossi, I can have a case of someone who, even though he is Roy Ladun Dini Nefashos, he's not Roy Ladun Dini Nefashos. Ha'ika Eid Zovim De Mama. Rabbi Yossi Shita is that Lo Amrinan, Lo Amrinan Mikal Mikulo Lechumra. So if we found that Eidim perjured themselves in a monetary case, they are still qualified to testify in a capital case. Kashal Adini Nefashos. Even though he's Pasul Adini Mominos, because he's already been proven to falsify his testimony in a monetary case, nevertheless, he still remains kosher to a Nefashos case. And therefore, this principle formulated by the Mishnah Nida, Kala Roy Ladun Dini Nefashos, Roy Ladun Dini Mominos, that anyone who is qualified for a capital case is ipso facto qualified for a monetary case, that's not true. I'll give you, according to Rabbi Yossi, a scenario in which he's qualified to judge a capital case, even though he's disqualified to judge a monetary case. And that's the case where there were Eidim Zomim that proved that he perjured himself in a monetary case. Rabbi Yossi insists that he's still kosher in a capital case. El Olav, and therefore by process of elimination, if this Mishnah is antithetical to Rabbi Yossi, is Rabbi Meir here? It must be reflecting the Shita Rabbi Meir, that you go from Kal to Chamur, and if he was perjured in a case of Dini Mominos, he's therefore excluded, he's disqualified for Dine Nefashos as well, for a more Chamur case. So the Gemara says, this is now again Rabbi Abba Bar Yaakov, who's arguing against Rav Papi, Mimai, there's no proof that Mishnah is a Mishnah, a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Meir, reflecting Rabbi Meir Shita. Why? Dilma Bipsule Yuchsin Koi. The subject of that Mishnah is not someone who is disqualified based on his perjury, but rather someone who's disqualified because he is an Eved. An Eved has the same din as an Isha, and just like a woman is Pasul Yedus, again in most cases, so too an Eved is disqualified for Yedus. And now the question is, we have to analyze his pedigree, his Psul Yuchsin, meaning his family. And what it means is that if we found that after checking out his lineage, we were able to be machshir him, we were able to qualify him for Dine Nefashos, that means we decided that he's not an Eved and he can testify in a capital case, then how much more so the Mishnah establishes he can testify in a monetary case. And that's a principle that even Rabbi Yossi would accept.
Can a convert be a judge in a capital case?
Who, an Eved?
I'm talking about, I'll take a Ger.
A Ger?
Or a Bamzer. Because yeah, it says...
I don't think so. I think
it's... Judges in several cases may be of impure pedigree, including a Bamzer or convert, as I thought. Therefore, in the Fashot, a Bamzer and a convert can't be, according to this.
Right.
It's number six.
Right. But the opposite is not true, meaning if he's Royal Ladun Dine Nefashos, where the standard is even higher, then certainly he's disqualified for Dine. I'm sorry, if he's Royal Ladun Dine Nefashos, then certainly he qualifies for Dine Mominos. But if on the other hand we found that he was disqualified for Dine Nefashos, then at least in the case of an Eved, he would be possible Dine Mominos. So that Mishnah doesn't reflect any, that doesn't express any contradiction to Rabbi Yossi, and therefore you have no right to assume that this is Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Meir. The Ilo Tema Hachi, And I'm going to prove to you from the Mishnah itself that we're talking about a principle that could be accepted by Rabbi Yossi, namely Psule Yuchsin. Why? Because Seifa Diktoni, the end of that Mishnah says the following: Yesh Roy Ladun Dini Mamonos, the Ein Roy Ladun Dini Nefashos. That don't flip it around and say that if the judge qualifies for Mamonos, therefore ipso facto we can jack him up as a judge for a capital case. That's not so. Amai Eino Roy. What would be a situation where he's disqualified for Dine Mamonos, but yet he would be kosher for Dine Nefashos, correct? Yesh Roy Ladun Dine, I'm sorry, that he could be Roy Ladun Dine Mamonos, but he's disqualified. Amai Eino Roy. Why would he not be Roy for Dine Nefashos, but yet he's Roy for Dine Mamonos? And the answer is, this is reflecting the Shita Rabbi Yossi, the Itzam B'dine Nefashos, and Rabbi, the Itzam B'dine Nefashos, Roy Ledine, Roy Lodun Dine Mamonos, that if he was disqualified for Dine Nefashos, then he's Roy Ladun Dine Mamonos. This, I think, you have to read as a rhetorical question. In other words, nobody would suggest that from a chomer he could be kosher for a kal. So this can't be. So therefore, how do we come up with a case where he's Roy Ladun Dine Mamonos? Mamonos is a kal. If he's disqualified for Dine Nefashos, he's suspect to lie or falsify the verdict in a case of capital cases, then certainly we cannot accept his status as a judge in Dini Mamonos. But nobody would question that if he's excluded for Dini Nefashos because he's chashud to deviate from the law, then certainly he's possible in Dini Mamonos. So how do we have a case, therefore, in the Sefer, the Mishnah, that he can serve as a judge for Dini Mamonos, even though he's been disqualified for Dini Nefashos? Ella, the only possibility is Bipsule Yuchsin Koi, that we're talking about a case of Yuchsin. And even though he is disqualified for Dine Nefashos, that's because the standards and the requirements of Dine Nefashos are that much greater than that of Dine Mamonos. So there may be some cases where, even though he has a Psul Yuchsin, and technically, therefore, he cannot judge in capital cases, but still he would be qualified to judge in monetary cases. Is Hachinami b'psulei yuchsin koi, even in the ratio of the Mishnah, we're talking about psulei yuchsin, and therefore this Mishnah doesn't reflect the shita of Rabbi Meir. It could be accepted by Rabbi Yossi. Ella, so the Gemara has a different Mishnah now. And this Mishnah is in Masechta Rosh Hashanah, Ella Hacha Kasasam Lan Tana. What does it say in the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah? Elu hein hapsulim hamasachi bekuvio malvi berivis afriche yonim sochei shviyis veha avadim. The Mishnah gives a whole list of psulei edus, and then the Mishnah gives a klal, a general rule. Zeh klal kol edus she'ein ha'isha k'shera la. Any testimony, there may be one or two cases where women are accepted for testimony. Like, for example, if they testify that a man died and therefore his wife is allowed to get remarried, that they're believed on. But for the rest of the balance of the Avios, they're not believed. Is af hein ein ksherin la, and so too all the above are considered disqualified. Mani, who does this reflect? I'm going to prove to you by passive elimination that this must be a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Meir, because Elim Rabbi Yossi says that Lo Amrinon Mikal Lechamur Va'ika Edus Bedine Nefashos, in testimony on a capital case Eino Isha K'sheira La, a woman is not qualified, Vehein K'sheira La, and yet all the above are qualified. Elolav Rabbi Meir he. So again, according to Rabbi Yossi, how does this Mishnah have the right to say that all the above, in all these cases, they are possible? What about a case of Eidus Bedini Nefashos, where the Isha is considered excluded, Vehem Ksherin La, and yet they would be considered kosher? Meaning, let's say according to Rabbi Yossi, we're saying that even though you might be possible for dine mamonos, but you could be kosher for dine nefashos. So let's say the Eidim purged themselves in a monetary case, they still remain qualified for a capital case according to Rabbi Yossi. And therefore the Mishnah has no right to say that kol she'edus she'eino isha k'sherin la, af heidein ain't k'sherin la. And therefore it must be Rabbi Meir. At this point, we finally succeeded in finding a stam Mishnah like Rabbi Meir. His kum, bar chama, he was so excited, because now what we're saying is that if the Eidim stole and they're possible for a kal, which is relative to dine nefashos, which is more chamur, then they're also possible for dine nefashos, because we're saying amrina mikula lechumra is kam Rabbi Chia, kam Rabbi bar chama the kable lecharge lekule. I'm sorry. Nashke akare, he kissed Rav Poppy on his foot. Vekavle, and he accepted upon himself lecharge for the taxes of the king, the kule shnia, that he would pay for the taxes for the rest of the year. So the Rosh wants to know, lechor, that's a kind of a shochad. How could he pay the person who is going to paskin on his behalf and give him financial benefits? It's going to look like he paid him off lechatchila. So the Rosh says that technically there's a halacha that he, meaning Rav Papi, would have been potter from paying the taxes in any event, because for this you have to learn a sugya at the beginning of Bava Basra, who's chayav to pay taxes, but a Talmud Chacham doesn't have to pay taxes. Just give me one second here. Now, I missed one point here, so I just want to go back for a second. On the list in the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah that we just finished, which is the Stam Mishnah Rabbi Meir, we have Mesachik Bekubia, Malvi Beribis, Mafricha Yonim, and Sochei Shvius. All these individuals are disqualified as witnesses because they're suspect for the love of money to perjure themselves. The Mesachik Bekubia loves to get money even though he's kind of stealing by gambling, and the Malvi Beribis take interest, and the Mafricha Yonim are willing to steal pigeons from other people's property, and Sokrei Shvius, for the sake of making a profit, they'll violate the Isra of Liochla V'lo L'schora. And yet the Mishnah says that in all these cases these categories of psulim are possible even for dine nefashos, correct? Because Zach Klal, it says kol eidus she'eino isha k'sherila af heinein k'sherila, which includes dine nefashos. So you're going from a kula to a chumra. Someone who's suspect in monetary cases is ipso facto suspect in capital cases, and that must reflect the shita of Rabbi Meir. Alright, now we start the Mishnah.
So you said this time Mishnah is in Rosh Hashanah.
That's what I meant to say. This last Mishnah that we did, I meant to say Rosh Hashanah. I didn't express myself well. You probably thought that when I said the last Mishnah that we just did, I meant the Mishnah here in Sanhedrin. Mm-hmm. What I meant was the Mishnah that we just studied now to establish that we paskin like Rabbi Meir, that we go from a kula to a chumra, and if he's suspect in monetary cases, then ipso facto he's suspect in capital cases. And that must be so because all these psulim here, with the exception of Avodim, that's already something else, are all possible because they're suspect to purge themselves for the sake of money. But then you're going to disqualify them under the klal of kol eidus she'eino isha k'sherila, even for dini nefashos. What right do you have to do that according to Rav Yossi? You can't say that since you disqualified them and you suspect them in dine mamonos, therefore they're suspect in dine nefashos. That must be going mikala lechamura, and that reflects the sheet of Rabbi Meir. No good?
Yeah.
I think we have it now. And that's going to support our psak like Abaye, that Abaye says, mumar ochel nevelis lahachis, is suspect to perjure himself in dini nefashos. Now, again, you know, you may say that eating non-kosher food is a pretty serious violation, but the Gemara assumes that that's called ra l'shamayim. And Rava against Abai would say that in such a case we can accept his edus in a more severe case where it's ra l'shamayim and ra l'brios, meaning a person who eats non-kosher food presumably doesn't do any harm to any other human being on the face of the earth, but if he purges himself in a monetary case, and how much more so in a capital case, then he's doing terrible things, labrios. So you're going from a kal to a chomor. Now Abaye is willing to do that, and Abaye is standing on the shoulders of Rabbi Meir, who says that huzam le mamanos is posel l'dine l'dine nefashos. He goes amrina mikala l'chamur.
In this case, really, does it against, he eats it la'achis. If it's befahesia, isn't that more severe? Because it's like idolatry.
Well, I would say this, that the law is that yeharik val yavar, you have to give up your life rather than violate any of the Torah laws befahesia. Now, does that mean because the Aveira is more chamur, or because we introduce another element here into the equation, which is called Chil Hashem, that has to be taken under advisement? I would say it's a separate halacha of Chil Hashem. It doesn't make the Aveira more chamur, but rather it's a separate din of Chil Hashem and Kiddush Hashem. But you're asking, Doc, what would be if a person was a mumar lahachis in public? Should Rava in that case agree to Abaye that he should be disqualified for Edus because we add the extra element of Farhesio? Is that your question?
Yeah.
Could be. I don't know if maybe you know Rishonim that I don't know. I would just say intuitively that that's not the case, because the Farhesio element here is not, we're looking for what's called Ra Labrios. In other words, the discrepancy here between the Kal and the Chamur is that we introduce another element of ra labrios, that it's harmful to another human being. So I don't know that Farhesia changes that. It does introduce an element of Chil Hashem, but maybe not in terms of the Avera of ra labrios.
What does Farhesia mean?
Farhesia means public, in public, in front of 10 Jews.
Well, somebody does it, but Farhesia is going to make
you know what, but there are certain technical psulim in Edus, yes. That's what Rava is insisting, and the way that, you know, to disqualify someone as a witness when we need his testimony, you know, that has to fulfill certain requirements, and in this case the requirement is that he's already chashed on such an avera. I mean, it's unbelievable. The Gemara wants to say that if a man is chashed on a riot, right, he has no morality in that area, that he still might be able to testify about an Eishes Ish and be matir her, and the Gemara says maybe he can't testify to be matir her and say her husband died, but maybe he could testify that her husband is still alive, you know, and the Gemara says mayim gnuvim yimtaku. I mean, these were the svaras in the previous sugya, but you see that the Gemara is going through very, you know, very legalistic technical procedures to see whether we disqualify someone for testimony. I think, Brian, what you said before is really Abaye's sheet. Abaye is saying that the man eats nevelus lahachis.
Yeah.
You know, he's not interested in the kashrus laws. We have issues with never here in the state of Israel with, you know, non-kosher restaurants and stuff like that in various places. You know, here in Yerushalayim you'll hardly see it, but outside of Yerushalayim, you might see it. And we're up in arms, you know. But the question is, like you say, if he has no Yerushalayim, then maybe we shouldn't accept his testimony for anything. And believe it or not, that was a chiddush, that Abaye was machadish. And the Gemara works very hard here to see if we can justify that we're passing like Abaye. All right, Rabbosai, we'll start the mission. Now, since we've been discussing in the previous Mishnayos what we call psuli edus and psuli dayonus, you know, who is disqualified from as being a witness, who's disqualified as serving as a judge. Now we want to get down to a list of the psuli edus. Now, I'm going to confess up front that in some cases I'm going to fudge it a little bit. Why? Because there are sugyas that we have to see later to really clarify the Mishnah. The Mishnah is very, very technical. We need diagrams here, and we're going to try to do the best we can. But I'm going to emphasize the part of the Mishnah that I do understand at this point, and I'm going to de-emphasize the part of the Mishnah that I don't understand. Okay. So the Elohena Krovin. Okay, the first category of psuli edus are krovin, are relatives. Okay, we're going to see later on at the end of this Mishnah that there's an entirely different category of psulim that are not related to each other. There's no blood relationship at all, or not even an ishto kigufo kind of relationship. And that's going to be a sone and an oev. You know, it could be that if two people work together and they have a very special relationship, then we're afraid that maybe they might lie in a bezdin. So first, we want to focus on the krovin. And the Mishnah now reflects the shita of Rabbi Akiva. So it says, Achiv v'achi aviv v'achi imo. Now, what we have to know is that there's something called a rishon berishon, and then there's something called a rishon b'sheni. So, for example, a father to testify on his own son, or vice versa, son for his father, that's rishon berishon. Or two brothers to testify one for the other, that's called Rishon Berishon. Nobody denies that that's called a Psul Kurva Doraisa. That's the real McCoy. But the Mishnah also adds Achi Aviv. Now once you get to Achi Aviv, that's already one step removed. He's testifying on his uncle. Again, we haven't touched upon a different kind of uncle. Now we're talking about a blood relative. This is my father's brother or my mother's brother. That's a real uncle, so to speak. Then the Mishnah goes on to say, "Ubalachos, ubalachos aviv, ubalachos imo." Now we're talking about a different kind of an uncle or an aunt, right? We're talking about, we'll get back to balachos in just a second, but let's talk about balachos aviv, ubalachos imo. This means that it's not my father's brother, right? It's my father's brother, my father's brother-in-law, meaning my father's sister, who's my aunt, blood relative, and now she's married. So he married into the family. And marriage also creates a psul kurva. That's called ishto kigufo. Then we have balachoso here listed in the Mishnah. Balachoso means his brother-in-law. So everyone here should just be thinking about his sister, and if he didn't have a sister, he has to imagine that he had a sister, and her husband. So my sister's husband, which in modern Hebrew is called a gis, but that word doesn't, later on the Gemara is going to mention the word gis, but in this Mishnah, it doesn't appear. So you have to know bal achoso, because the Gemara doesn't want to, at this point, the Mishnah doesn't want to mention giso because that's going to just confuse you. We want to get very specific. How is it your brother-in-law? And the answer is, this is the husband of your sister. Then the Mishnah goes on and says, ubaal imo. This is what we call a stepfather in our language. So this man married my mother. So, for example, this is easy for me to remember because after my father passed away a number of years later, my mother got remarried. She married Rabbi Yeshua Cohen, Olav Shalom. So he would be Baal Imi. He was my, again, I never called him my stepfather. I never thought of it in those terms, but I can't testify on him, and we're going to see that anyone who cannot testify in, if the curve is in one relationship, then it goes in the other relation, he can't testify on my behalf. And then the Gemara is going to ask, can we testify together? And then the Gemara is going to ask, what if he testifies against me and not in my favor? Okay, well, this is going to come up in the sugya. Now we have Chamiv. Okay, Chamiv is his father-in-law. Let's see how he translates Chamiv. Yeah, he also says father-in-law. The Giso. Now, what's Giso over here? So if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says it's his wife's sister's husband. Okay, so now you have to think of your wife's sister. Okay, in my case, my wife Charney has a sister named Elke, and Elke's married to Joel, Yoel. So Yoel is my brother-in-law because he married my wife's sister. And that's an extension of the brother-in-law that was mentioned earlier in the Mishnah of Baal Achoso. Baal Achoso is my brother-in-law David, who's married to my sister Adina. Okay, so
they're both brother-in-laws, except that the one brother-in-law is almost to say your real brother-in-law, it's your sister's husband, whereas the other one is your wife's.
Correct, it's one step removed, because first of all you have to tell me that I can't testify on my wife's sister. My wife's sister herself is my sister-in-law. Now you're telling me I can't even testify for her husband against or on behalf, because he's called my brother-in-law. That's a lot more far removed, as Doc, you point out, than Baal Achosi, because Baal Achosi, at least Achosi, is a Rishon B'Rishon, and now we apply Ishto Kegufo, that's basically a Rishon B'Rishon. In the case of my wife's sister, that's already one step removed, and now you're adding Baal Ke Ishto.
So that's what the Gemara calls a Gis.
That's what the Mishnah calls a Gis. But again, this is used because we're expanding the brother-in-law definition. Okay. What else do we have? So I can't testify on my mother's husband. I can't testify on my father-in-law, meaning my wife's father. I can't testify on my wife's sister. I can't testify on my wife's sister's husband. And now the Mishnah goes a little bit further. Hein uvnehem v'chasnehem. Okay? Now we're taking it down to the level of their sons. So let's say, for example, we go back to the first case, Achi Aviv. So what is the son? What is my relationship to the son of my father's brother? He's my first cousin. So now we're getting into cousins. This is already called Sheni B'Sheni. You know, until now we were speaking about Rishon B'Sheni, if I go to my uncle, and if I talk about my wife's sister, that's again one step removed. Now we're talking about my wife's sister's children, or my uncle's children, my aunt's children. That's already Sheni B'Sheni, if you follow it. I mean, again, if we had a chart, it would be easier. We're going to go through this in the Gemara a little bit clearer. But not only that, the Mishnah adds Chasnehem. In other words, again, we're going to add Baal Ke'ishto, but now on the level of Sheni B'Sheni. So we're talking about my first cousin. In other words, he and I share siblings as parents. In other words, his father is my mother's brother, right? But not only that, we're talking about his son-in-law, Chasneim. Wow, that's really extending the psulim. So most Rishonim hold this is already a derabbanan. Then we get to Churgo Levado. Now, before we were talking about blood relatives, and we added their children to get cousins and their sons-in-law that are also considered like cousins. But now we're talking about Churgo. Now we're talking about, let's say, my mother has a, just one second, let's see, what would be the case of a Churgo? Oh, I marry a woman who has a child from a previous marriage. That child is not related to me, blood marriage. And yet I can't testify against him. But here, my relationship is really based totally on Baal Ke'ishto. There's no blood relative element here at all. We don't share any common heredity. So that's called Levado. Levado means that I have no extension of Baal Ki Ishto or his sons or his sons-in-law. He is my wife's son, and he's called Bni Chargi, meaning I'm his stepfather, but I have no relationship whatsoever with his relatives, just with him himself.
So, it says the Bible repeats, it doesn't extend, it doesn't go on, it's with him.
Correct. Because again, we only use the extension rule when we begin with a relative. Right? So let's see, for example, we spoke about Baal Achosos, right? And not only Baal Achoso, but we spoke about Baal Imo and the father of my wife and so forth and so on. In all these cases, I have a blood relative. And then we say, Hein Ubreim V'chasneim. Then we're going to extend it to various generations. But in the case of Churgo, where we start simply with the fact that I'm married to this woman, that's my relationship to her son from a previous marriage, that we don't extend. Zu Mishnas Rabbi Akiva. Avol Mishnah Rishona, there was a Mishnah which came before Rabbi Akiva, and I think we once mentioned that there were many, many Mishnayos that date back to the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, way before Rabbi Akiva came to the scene. And, you know, we don't always have access to those Mishnayos. Occasionally we do have access to those Mishnayos. And the Mishnah Rishonah says, Dodo uben dodo v'chol haroi liyorsha. Okay, now we have to see what is the view of the Mishnah Rishonah. We have halacha in Yerusha of Beis Avosam. L'mishpachosam l'Beis Avosam. Which means that Yerusha always goes through the father and not through the mother. Let's see if he says anything here. He says, by law of inheritance, he writes here that a man cannot inherit his sister's son. Do you follow? Because now we're going through not the male relatives, but the female relatives. And in such a case, according to the Mishnah Rishonah, there would be no Psul Edus, because Psul Edus is a reflection of the laws of Yerusha. And that's a sugi at the end of Bava Basra in Perek Yesh Nochlin. So again, what we have to do at some point, I'm not going to do it now, is calculate all the differences between the Mishnah Rishonah and the Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva. Our Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva is a more Chumadiga Mishnah. It's broadening the scope of Psule Kurva. Now, what happens if a person was a relative and he's no longer a relative? Let's say, for example, if you're related to your wife's husband, well, that's because they're married. What happens if they get divorced and now they're no longer related? So it says the following, Kol akarov lo biosa shah. There's a critical moment that if he was already a karov, he was already a relative and disqualified, then he's possible. But karov v'nisrache kareze kosher. If it wasn't that he was still related at the critical moment, and we have to see exactly what the critical moment is, let's assume the critical moment, for argument's sake, is Shas Hagodah b'Bezdin, at the time of the testimony. So in a sense, what the Mishnah is being makil is that a brother-in-law, if between the time of Re'iyah Sa'edus and the time of Haggadah Sa'edus he divorced his wife, who's your relative, then he's kosher li'edus. Why? Because he's a karev, he's a karov v'nisrachek. Well, let's just see if I got that right. Okay. He's talking here about a son-in-law, and now his son-in-law, who was married to his daughter, and now after the death of his daughter, he's no longer his son-in-law. Okay, but that's not what I was looking for. Just one second. Does he tell you what the critical hour was? Okay, I'm not finding it now, but let's assume that what I told you is right. We'll be done with Kafskos. So again, at the time of the Riyas HaEdus, he was a brother-in-law, a son-in-law. But now he's no longer a brother-in-law and a son-in-law. He's a Reze Kosher. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Right, at the time of the actual witnessing of whatever he's testifying about later on, right? So there's time T1 and time T2, and now we're wedging something in the middle here, a divorce or a death. At time T1, they were related, and that's the time of Re'iyah, when he saw the testimony. And later on, at time T2, which is the time that he shows up in Bezdin to testify, he's no longer related, because in between somebody died or there was a divorce, then the Mishnah is saying that he can testify. Because the critical moment is the time of the testimony. Now, I see here that there's a Rashi that I missed. Just 1 second. Okay, so Rashi introduces another element into the equation. Rashi says that the moment of Re'iyah is also critical. And therefore, according to Rashi, if when it says in the Mishnah, Karov lo bi'osa shah, then it means even if they were krovim at the time of the Re'iyah. So in that frame of reference, you wonder exactly what the Mishnah is being mechadish. I guess the Mishnah is saying that even though they once had this kurva relationship, and you might therefore suspect that that kurva relationship continues even after technically they're not related. No, the Mishnah says that the past is the past, and all we're interested is in the present. And the present is comprised of two critical moments. Number one, the moment of Re'iyah. Number two, the moment of Haggadah. So again, what we're saying now is not like what we said before. If at the time of the Re'iyah they were Krovim, that already disqualifies them for testimony, even if the testimony will take place later when they're already Rechokim. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Afilu Mesa Bito, V'yeshlo Bonami Mena, Harei Ze Karov. Okay, now we're talking about a son-in-law. And unfortunately, his daughter passes on. Says Rabbi Yehuda, if that couple, his daughter and his son-in-law, had children together, then then the father-in-law's relationship to his son-in-law continues beyond the death of his daughter, because the children cement that relationship. They are still considered krovim, because of the children that, let's say my son-in-law has children, so those children are my grandchildren, that itself makes him the father of my grandchildren. That continues the psul of kurva. So I think Rabbi Yehuda is coming up with a chumrah. The Tanakama was of the opinion that karf and nisrachik is kosher without qualifying, and Rabbi Yehuda says no. Again, had Rabbi Yehuda said emasai, then we had a whole sugya that's coming to embellish the Tanakama.
You got the opposite side of the Kohen, not related to this. Is a Kohen, if the daughters had children,
right,
and the husband, and she goes back to her father's house.
Oh, right, to eat truma and stuff like that. Right, that if there are children, then she doesn't go back to eat, because she's considered a zar or zara. Ha'oe va'asone. Okay, no, they're not related anymore. Is what's the story in such a case? So the Mishnah adds a new category of psulei edus, because again we're going back to the first three words of the Mishnah, Eluheim hakrovim, and ha'oev asoni are listed now as krovim, so to speak, as psulim. Now, who is an oev and who is a sone? Oev zeshushvinon. We would say in our parlance, the best man at my wedding, or the best woman at my wedding. What's a shushvinan? Technically, a shushvinan were those who, after the couple got married, they were in charge of making sure that all the food was taken care of. But a shushvinan is a very close friend. The Gemara says in Sukkah that Shushvina are even potim in a Sukkah, just like the Chasid Kali, after they get married, they don't have to go into the Sukkah because that would impinge and limit the Simcha. So to the Shushvina, a part of that entourage, to be Misameh, the Chasid Kali, the Chasid Kali needs them desperately, so they're also potim in a Sukkah, so they can eat in the house, you know, when they make a big party for the Chasid Kali. Sone? I don't think so. I think Osek b'mitzvah, potim in a mitzvah would be in a case where the mitzvah cannot be postponed. Here what we're saying is that for 7 full days they are you know, under the status of Shushvina, and they're potim in a sukkah. That's what I would say, because I remember the Mishnah has 2 categories. It has Osek b'mitzvah, potim in a mitzvah, and it has Shushvina as a separate category. What about a sone? What's the case of a sone? Was it attempted murder? I mean, what's the sone? So it's unbelievable. The Mishnah says, Kol shelo diber imo shlosha yamim be'eva. In other words, they had some sort of altercation, and for 3 days consecutively, they don't speak to each other. I mean, in our society, the people don't speak to each other just because they don't speak to each other.
Yeah, 3 years.
I'm always afraid to say Shabbat Shalom to someone on the streets, because if he doesn't respond to me, as the Gemara says, he's a gazlan, and I don't want to be machshel him in an easy example. Lately, I got a little bit better lately. I see that it all depends how you approach them. Like, if you give them something with a little extra feeling, then they do respond. You know, some people are amazing. They'll give you a Shabbat Shalom Umvarak. You know, they'll even add something. But there's something about this society. I believe Yitzhak Ben Dichman would give it to me over the head for saying it, but there's something sick in this society. And people, I mean, we're surrounded by 80 million enemies, and we're all in the same boat. We can't say hello to each other. I mean, that's... I don't know. It's my biggest problem with...
Depends where you are.
If you live in a small community, you know, that's something different, but you walk down the streets here, they look at you like you're crazy if you say hello to them, you know? I can't understand it. In Chutzlitz, we didn't have that. I don't know, everybody has to ask themselves in their own, you know, their own Chutzlitz, but...
It's never a very big thing to say good morning to people, always.
Yeah. But here the guy doesn't speak to him for 3 days. I don't know how in our society you would determine that. You know?
But here it's not a case of the
amazing. Be'eva, right. It says Be'eva because they had some sort of altercation. But look, it takes a while, you know, if you have some sort of run-in with someone, it does take a little while until you can soften it up. And the Gemara says 3 days, you're already a sone. I mean, it doesn't give you much of a leeway. You know, you better patch up the relationship real quick.
People who won't speak to you. I've had somebody who doesn't speak to me for 11 years now.
This is common. I just hope he's not your brother, that's all.
No,
I'm not joking with you, Brian. Why do I make that comment? I wasn't suspecting that you don't talk to your brother for 11 years, but I'm saying today we live in a world where families are broken up. It's terrible. Even parents and children, it's not so posh, you know. Well, in the case of a relative anyway, you're posh, so we don't need Sone, you know. He'd be a double psul. He'd be a lo nechshedu Yisrael al kach. You know, it's unbelievable. The Mishnah itself says that that apparently there's another opinion here. I mean, Rashi says lahoid shekem yishum eva v'ava. So Rashi says v'dafka b'edus pliyav b'din module. Okay, this is a very profound Rashi. Rashi's saying that the standards for witnesses are lower than the standards for disqualifying a judge. And he says with regard to judges, we're gonna accept the psul of oev, and in the case of witnesses, we can accept an oev. And lo nechshedu Yisrael kach. We're not gonna suspect a person of purging himself because he harbors some sort of enmity against a person, or he has a certain liking for a person.
So with the end of the cipher of this Mishnah, therefore it means that if you're a sona or you can't be...
You can testify. That's going to the... That's what Rashi says, lo pligi, they don't argue here, ella le'inyan avis, but le'inyan din, ladun, he says, then... Then they Even the second opinion of the Mishnah would accept that there's such a psul called an oel v'sonen. Minani mili, what's the source for psule kurva? Asks the Gemara. The Torah Rabbanan, we learned in a brisa, lo yumsu avos albanim. The pasuk says at the end of Dvarim, or in the middle of Dvarim, we're going to get to it soon in our reading of the parashiyos, that you cannot put the father to death because of the sons. And then the next part of the pasuk says velo banim al avosam. You can't put the son to death because of the iniquities of his father. So the Gemara wants to know, how do we understand this pasuk? If we read it kipshuto, im olami chelo yumsu avos ba'avon banim ba'avon avos, that you don't put someone to death because of his son's violations, or the other way around. He says harei kvar nemar ish becheto yumas, that the Torah says in that very same pasuk that a man dies for his own sins. Ella, but rather this pasuk is coming for a ribui in a whole different context, namely in edus that lo yumsu avos al banim bi edus banim ubanim lo yumsu avos bi edus avos. Again, we now have what's called a Rishon Barishon. This is the real McCoy Psul Kurva. Namely, that a parent and a child are considered first-level relatives. Now again, we're talking about a capital case. The Gemara later on is going to quote a Pasuk Mishpat Echad Yelachem to prove that the monetary cases, are the, in terms of whose kosher liyedus, are the same as capital questions. But now the Gemara wants to know the following. Is this derivation really accurate? Ubanim biavon avos lo? Are you telling me that since it says ish becheto yumas, you already derive the conclusion that children will not suffer punishment because of their father's iniquities? That's not so. Ksiv poked avon avos albanim. Right, in the Aser Sadid, in the Yud Gimel Midas HaRachamim, it says there, "Poked Ovos Salbanim," means Hashem remembers the sins of the father when he meets out punishment to the son. So basically we have here a stira. Now we have to reconcile. On the one hand, Ish Becheto Yumas, on the other hand, Poked Ovos Salbanim. How do we reconcile this? Hasam Kisha Ochazin Maisa Voseim Biyadehem. That if the sons continue in the sinful ways of their father, then they will suffer the punishment also from the father. Meaning that somehow the son should have learned from his father not to do such a thing. It's interesting because usually we assume you learn from someone who's a tzaddik, you know, how to emulate a tzaddik. He was saying the opposite. That sometimes you have to learn from a Rasha not to do a negative act. Kinesanya, like we learned in the Braisa, the af ba'avonos avosam itam yimaku. Okay, there's a pasuk in Vayikra that means that sometimes the children are wiped away, yimaku, are wiped away because of the sons of their fathers. And when is this? The Braisa says, Kisha Ochsin, if there's any way we could close the door, because I don't hear myself think. Kisha Ochsin, Maisav, Oseyem, Biyadehem. We're talking about a case where they continue the sinful practices of their father.
That's a usual situation. The child follows on his parents.
The assumption is that he should have learned, you know, he should have somehow learned not to follow his father's practices. Maybe you'll say that if the son is an original sinner, you know, he's not imitating his father, then in such a case he should suffer from his father, meaning. Again, I don't know exactly what the Havamina is, that if his father was, you know, was not responsible for this particular kind of inherited sinful practice, then he should still suffer for his father's sinful practices. I don't know what the Havamina was, but Kishu Omer Ish Becheto Yumasu, the Torah comes to tell you that in such a case, where he's not following in his father's footsteps, he's not going to be punished for his father's sins. But where does the Torah say that im bavon avosam atem imaku, and he will suffer for his father's sins? Hare kisha ochsim maisav oseyem, when they follow in their father's footsteps. Velo, once again, the Gemara wants to question, is this really so? Vaksiv v'kashlu ish b'achiv. And this is a pasuk in Vayikra as well. It says there, v'kashlu ish b'achiv, man will stumble over his brother, ish b'avon achiv. It seems like man will be held responsible for the sins of his brother. Now, we just established that except for the one case of Oksim, Maise, Avoseim, Biyadeim, other than that, you're not going to be punished for someone else's sins. And the answer is, Melamed Shekulon Arevim Zebes, that we have a concept called Arvus, which means that I'm responsible for you because I could have somehow prevented you from violating this Aver and I failed to do so. Hasam Shahaya Biyadam Limchos Velo Michu. So we have now another case where you'll be punished for someone else's sins. Not only in the case of Oksim, Maise, Avoseim, but also in the case of Hahaya Biyadam Limchos Velo Michu. And this, I think, the source for this is the Milchames Ai. You remember that? Where Ochan steals from the booty, and I don't remember exactly, I think it was 36 people died as a result because they could have prevented that from happening. That's called Arvus. And here we turn to Daf Chav Ches Amid Aleph. Ashkechan Avos Libanim Ubanim Li Avos. So we know now that there's a psul edus in the case of parents to children and children to parents for kolshkein ovos ladadi, and the Gemara assumes that how much more so two brothers cannot testify one concerning the other, because that's even a closer relationship. And if you take a look here, Rashi says that if a person is disqualified to testify against his first cousin, then how much, right? And why? Because, I'm sorry, if a person is possible to testify against his nephew, right, the son of his brother, then how much more so he can't testify against his brother? Is banim lebanim inolan. But what about first cousins? Now we're talking about not my nephew, correct, the son of my brother, but rather two sons of two different brothers. That's called banim lebanim. That's already called sheni b'sheni. In came lichtov kra lo yumsu avos al ben. Why does it say in plural banim? It's my banim. That's a ribui for two banim of two different brothers. So we have the brothers that apostle to each other. That's rishon b'rishon. And now their two sons apostle one to the other because of sheni b'sheni. And that's introduced by banim. The afilu banim la'adadi. Even though they are not really banim in that sense, they're not two sons of the same father, they're two sons of two different fathers, nevertheless they're considered banim ladadi, they're considered as if they were shared the same father, and therefore they are posel b'torah sheni b'sheni. Ashkan banim ladadi v'banim li alma minol. And how do you know two brothers can't testify together, Moshe and Aaron, against another case? Do you follow? In other words, if one brother is testifying on another brother, okay, that's considered banim. But what about joining them together to testify against someone who's not related to them? And I'm not sure that that's going to be a chashash sheker, meaning if you have one relative testifying against another relative, you know, maybe they're falsifying their testimony. But in a case where two brothers are testifying together against someone else, it doesn't mean that they were working in collusion. Moshe v'Aaron should be possible. It's a technical psul. Amar Rami Bar Chama. Now, this is a long sugya to try to derive the psul of two krovim testifying in one kat against somebody else who's not a karov. And Rabbi Bar Chama claims that he has a svara. Now again, I don't think you should suspect that his father was a murderer. Okay. Svara, you didn't get that joke. No? No, we just had a long sugi about Bar Chama, whether he was a murderer or not, right? So Rami Bar Chama is not the son of a murderer, because at the end they you know, he kissed Rav Papi because there wasn't... Okay. Kirsanya, we learned in a brisa, ein ha'edim nasim zomim ad she'izumu shneihem. We have a technical law in Hazama that you can't say imanu ha'yisim against one. You can't say imanu ha'yisa against one of the two edim. You have to say imanu ha'yisim against both edim. And there's no such thing as Hazama to punish a person as an eid zomim under the law of asisam lokasha zomim lasos liachiv, unless you are mazim the entire cat. If you're going to say that two brothers can testify together in one cat against someone else, is nimsa eid zomem nerag bi edus achiv. Okay, I had this before. Let's see if I can get it again. Nimsa eid zomem nerag bi edus achiv. It comes out that one brother is testifying on behalf of the other brother. Even though, again, he's not testifying anything about his brother, but they're both testifying together, and his brother's testimony, or shall we say his brother's status as an Eid Zomem, is dependent upon his testimony, right? Because now they're mutually, reciprocally interdependent, and if they're interdependent, then the Hazama is going to be a result of the other brother's aid. Of his testimony. Do we have that? Okay. I'm impressed that you got that, because it took me a while to get there. Omale, Rav is going to slug up this svara of Rami Bar Chamilu Tanmeich. We have a Mishnah against you. Hadisnan. What does it say in the Mishnah? Shlosha Achim V'Echad Mitztarifi Moem. So you have a Chazak of Gimel Shanim, and you need two witnesses on each of the 3 years, and now we have three different kitos. Each one is testifying on one of the 3 years. This, he's testifying on 15, he's testifying on 16, he's testifying on 2017. Now, what's common to all these three groups of edus, these pairs, is that they're in each pair, there's a brother. So let's say Reuven, Shimon, and Levi are brothers. Reuven is one of the two Edim on the first year, and Shimon is one of the two Edim on the second year, and Levi is one of the two Edim on the third year. And the Mishnah Paskins, Harelu Gimel Edios Vehein Edus Achas LaZama. We can accept each one of these Kitos as a viable Edus and rely on it to establish Chazok of 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, and therefore the Machzik is. But as far as Hazom is concerned, then the law is that it's like one Edus, meaning that Hazoma will only apply to Vasisim Lo Kashizomam, to punish the Edim, only if we can be Mazim all three Kite Edim. Now here's a case where the Edus of Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, each one respectively on a different year, these three brothers, is interdependent as far as Hazom is concerned, and yet we're going to accept their Edus. This is an upslug against Rami Bar Chama. Do you follow that? He says the following: Nimtza Eid Zomim Mishalim Momim V'Edus Achiv. Each brother is necessary in order to effectuate Hazoma, in order to force the other brother to pay. And again, reciprocally, it goes in both directions. So you see that Hazoma is a special halacha, El Hazoma Mi'almakasi, that Hazoma works in its own way, and it's chitzoni, you know, it's outside of the box. It's Hochenami Hazoma Mi'almakasi, therefore you cannot prove from the fact that this halacha of Hazoma and Ad She'Yizum is Kulam that two brothers cannot testify together against someone else, and therefore Svara is not going to work, but rather we have to find a pasuk. And what is the pasuk? So the Gemara says, Elam Kain Lichtov Kra Ubein Al Avos. Right? There's an extra vav over here, and it says, V'lo Yamusi Ben. What does it say there in the pasuk? Uben Al Avos. Inami Heim Al Avos. My Ubanim. Why the extra vav? Afilu Banim Li Alma. So if the Torah would have only limited to a father testifying on his son, or a son testifying on his father, and passing that, then it would have said al ben al avos or heim al avos. But it says ubanim al avos. What's the extra vav? The extra vav is to tell me that they can't testify together against the third party. Ashkechan krovei av. So now we see that a son can't testify against his father, vice versa. That's only because they're related because of the father relationship, the paternal relationship. But krovei mino, how do I know I cannot testify on my mother and my mother's relatives? Omakravos. The extra plural, the use of the word plural, avos, trei zimni. Not the plural, but it says avos twice in the pasuk. And since it says avos twice in the pasuk, the second avos is coming to include even imahos. In eino inyan lekrovei av, we don't need the pasuk to repeat itself because we already have one avos. What's the second avos? Is tneu yuzit leinyan krovei ha'em. So now we have not only paternal krovim, but also maternal krovim. So it's fact the Gemara Ashkan Lechov, I know that it's logical that relatives can't testify against each other. Right? Because it says lo yumsu. Lo yumsu means to the detriment, right? That they shouldn't die. But l'schus minon, how do you know that they cannot testify on behalf, for the benefit of their relative? Interesting, the Gemara is not operating here with any svara whatsoever. It's pure technical. This is what we call psul aguf. Amakra yumsu, yumsu tre zimni. The Torah repeated lo yumsu an extra time. It's superfluous in eno inyan lechova tneu leinyan leschus. Ashkan bedini nefashis. The entire subject of this parasha is dine nefashis, capital cases, bedini mominos minolan amakra mishpat echad yilach. And we always equate the standards that are required for edus in dine nefashis to those that are required in dine mominos, and they're all identical, because it says mishpat echad yilachem. Amar Rav, achi abba lo yoidli hu ubino v'chasano. Okay, so for this we need a little bit of a diagram, which we should really sort of photocopy. I have it in very small print.
Yeah.
You have it a little bit larger.
No, very small.
Also very small.
You can see it.
Yeah. Okay, basically it goes like this. Rav is going to point out that the psulei edus work in both directions. So let's see. Achi abba, okay, this is my father's brother, that's my uncle, is lo yoidli. Not only is he disqualified from the testimony on my behalf, meaning I as his nephew, the uncle cannot testify on his brother's son, his nephew, but not only that, hu ubino. Okay, now we're talking about first cousins, v'chasono. So if you take a look, there's something called a cousin-in-law, which you'll see. And again, it goes in both directions. So they block out Rav, you'll see in the dark print, and they go up to his father's brother, his uncle's son is his first cousin, and then they add, this is what Rav is adding over here, that his cousin-in-law, that means his cousin's relatives, is achani lo oid, and they go the other way around, ani ubni v'chasani, we cannot testify on behalf of our first cousins and their sons-in-law.
Is that the cousin's sister's husband?
I don't think it makes any difference at this point.
How does it become the cousin?
It could be that the first cousin is let's say female, and she has or actually doesn't matter whether she's male or female in this case. In both cases, a psul of Sheni Masheni.
Yeah.
But now, let's say my first cousin marries off a child. So that would be a son-in-law, correct? And that's a cousin-in-law. Again, I may be mistaken here. Let's see if we can see what the Gemara says in the next line. We don't have that much time, but ve'amai havile shlishi berishon. So let's see. This what's it says? It says, just 1 second, does it say Chasoni, just 1 second. So Chasoni, why is that a Rishon B'Shlishi? Let's just see. My son-in-law is testifying against my uncle, correct? My son-in-law is testifying against my father's brother. So that's already his grandfather by marriage's brother. Great uncle by marriage. So his great uncle would be a shlishi. And not only that, you're saying that the law of a shlishi is exactly like a rishon, and therefore even Baal Ki'ishto kicks in. So a son-in-law of a rishon b'shlishi, or shall we say a shlishi b'rishon, the Gemara says. Vanan sheni b'sheni tnan. The Mishnah only goes as far as cousins, but it doesn't indicate that a shlishi can't testify against a rishon. Shlishi b'rishon lo tnan. The Mishnah doesn't mention a shlishi b'rishon. So the Gemara answers, my chasono d'ktoni b'masnisin chasan b'no. And if it's chasan b'no, that's already a rishon b'shlishi. Now with the Gemara, what we're going to leave in Mishnah for the next discussion here is the diagram that you have on the next page, which is number 35. That's already going to be sheni b'shlishi. So again, as far as shlishi b'rishon is concerned, that the Gemara is saying that we can even fit that into the Mishnah, but if we're going to go as far as sheni b'shlishi, that's already not in the Mishnah. Okay, Rabosei, so we'll stop here. Again, I know that the daf for today is Koach, and we only got part of Koach, but you know, I was filling in for the daf of yesterday a little bit because
makes this one more understandable. Yeah.
Right. Because on Shabbos I gave a few shiurim, so I wasn't able to dedicate enough time to Chav Zayin. So that's why I wanted to fit that in a little bit today. And we'll see how it goes. Okay, then, Rabbi Osai.